So you haven't finished Mass Effect either, right?
I have not.
Are you afraid to finish it now?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't know. I don't want the... I think someone on the Squawk Box said it's not about, like, the nerd rage, the typical nerd rage, but I still, in my heart, that's what I feel. That I'm like, I don't want to let the nerd rage scare me off, and yet it is.
Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast for March 19th, 2012. I am your host for today, AJ Minotti. My brother Mike is in Austin, Texas right now at an event to announce an undisclosed game title. I don't know what it is myself, actually, but I have an idea that it might be a very epic sequel. That's all I'll say. Joining me instead today is our very good friend, Mr. Jeffrey Grubb.
Hola!
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. I wish I was in Austin.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I had to drop his ass off at the airport at like 6:30 in the morning.
It's always fun.
Yes. That's okay. He was tweeting me from the airplane. I didn't realize his flight had Wi-Fi. I was very confused. It's like, aren't you in the air? And he's like, I am. That's what's so great. Oh.
Yeah, that's excellent. Now, they didn't drive him to the airport, didn't have a driver come pick him up, so it can't be that big of a company.
No, the driver did pick him up because, well, I got home and then this afternoon just like passed out, and that's when his plane landed. He texted me, "Should I tip this driver?" And I was like, "Oh, too late. That was 2 hours ago."
That's great because I remember he did a comic where it was like his first event that he went to as a journalist, and like he's all like wowed because the driver comes to pick him up, and he's like doing all these like really noobish things, and then the driver's like, "You're not going to tip me, are you?" No. No. So, it's a trend that's building with Mike.
Yeah, if you read any of his comics, you have to realize that, like, 90% of what happens in them is true. So, if you want to know what Mike Minotti's like, just read his comics.
Hey, absolutely.
But we will still do a show. We have our new segment to start it off. We're doing the second segment's a new one I've invented that I call, But the Future. Where we talk about the future. Then we'll talk about some games we've been playing this week. Yes. Yeah, that's what two T's. I can't read here. I got to pull up the new releases. I'll get to that, and that'll be the show. So, let's start it off. There was a reveal earlier this week after some layoffs were confirmed of Hit Obsidian. The people who are working on the South Park RPG, they've done Fallout New Vegas and all these other such games. That they had a deal with the publisher Bethesda for a flat rate for Fallout New Vegas with bonuses paid if they achieved a Metacritic of 85. Now, I don't know what the Metacritic was at the time of the game's release and this bonus period would have hit, but as of this story hitting, the Metacritic score for Fallout New Vegas was 84.
Of course it is.
God. Now, I doubt that missing this bonus is the reason why, you know, they got hit with layoffs. They also revealed that they were working on a next-gen RPG that got canceled, apparently. Their Xbox Live Arcade game is on hold. But, like every so often, this, like it gets reported again that companies get bonuses based on Metacritic, and everyone acts surprised, like it's the first time they've heard it. But it always does spark this discussion. It's still kind of a discussion worth having. But, like, is it fair to let a news aggregate site determine if you get a bonus for making a game or not?
Yeah, I think I remember reading some report a year ago, maybe even more at this point, where those Metacritic scores do closely relate and are correlated with sales. So it's not that insane, but it just feels kind of dirty because it is a news aggregate and it's not direct sales. You're not getting direct info and it's sort of opinion and like what's the difference between 84 and 85. And then it really brings in that conversation of how are these numbers being decided upon, because not everyone uses a 100-point scale. Barely anyone does.
Right. Like, I remember when 1UP made their switch to, like, letter scores. Like, when they gave a game, like, a B, which they considered to be, like, you know, a pretty good score. It was, like, a 75 or something like that, which on Metacritic is, like, garbage.
Right, yeah. It's a huge...
Like, weird stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, but at the same time, before Metacritic, I'm sure that there were bonuses built into these contracts based on some other insane thing. So
yeah, it was probably like when magazines were bigger and fewer, it's probably like you have to get X score in this magazine, X score in this. I'm sure there was something like it.
Yeah, I mean, Metacritic didn't invent this problem. It just maybe exacerbated it, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know. Do any other industries operate like this? I mean, I would always think that it would always be more based on sales and not criticism. Because, I mean, Fallout New Vegas did pretty well commercially, right?
Yeah. I think for the most part, like, I mean, if you go to movies...
I mean, I'm just saying, critics aren't falling over themselves to praise every Transformer movie, yet Michael Bay's making a shit ton of money, so...
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's... It's going to be much more to do with ticket sales or with book sales. You know, if you, like, get a three-book deal, you probably, as long as you're building an audience on each one, you're going to continue to get be able to publish more books. But, yeah, I think games might be the one that I can think of that I know for sure that does base any sort of contractual bonuses upon the reviewer and criticism directly. Or it does seem to be, like, the crux of a lot of people's bonus payment system.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what I found interesting, too, that with this announcement of staff layoffs is it did hit the South Park development team. I'm guessing, I mean, it had to hit people who worked in, like, art assets that are already done. And they're, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like that game's going to do pretty well. It's got a lot of hype. To cripple it would be kind of silly, I think.
Yeah, and using a lighter engine might help that team out a lot because they're always the
ones.
Wasn't
it, like, the same engine that they used for Dungeon Siege 3, I thought?
I don't know for sure.
Do, like, the animation style of South Park.
That'd be interesting. It's probably a much easier engine to work with than the Oblivion engine.
Oh, yeah. All right, so this will be a quick one, but I found this interesting. They've shown the first trailer for LEGO Batman 2, and this will be the first LEGO game to actually have full voiceover. And I actually don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, that is a bit weird.
Well, like, the trailer starts with just, like, some narration by Lex Luthor. So it's like, well, that could be whatever, all right. But, like, at the end of the trailer, you actually see, like, the Joker talking as, like, the little cutesy Lego one. But, like, it was basically a guy trying to do the Mark Hamill Joker, but it wasn't Mark Hamill. I was like, I don't know if I like it. I feel like it kind of ruins the lighthearted tone those games have always had.
Do you think the guy that was in charge of, like, the animation for the cutscenes in LEGO games are, like, damn talkies taking over my jobs?
It's like the artist of video games.
Yeah, exactly. It's not quite as
though I
poetic.
Do always like that the LEGO Batman game, and this one, too, it not only licenses Danny Elfman's original Batman theme, but it also had John Williams' original Superman theme.
Yeah,
okay, but yeah, like I said, quick hit there. Now, this is a little more near and dear to our hearts. This week, there were all kinds of crazy things happening in the gaming press. The first one was the announcement that CBS Interactive Entertainment, who is the parent company of GameSpot, has acquired Giant Bomb from Whiskey Media.
Insane.
This, of course, meaning that in a 5-year full circle saga, Jeff Gerstmann is back at GameSpot in a way. They've been assured that, you know, they are completely independent. No, they maintain their voice. No one is telling them what to do. And in fact, they got, like, new offices and probably some better stuff going for them. But I just found that really insane that, like it kind of came around. Because what was cool is Jeff Gerstmann sat down with John Davison and they had, like, a full disclosure conversation about what happened 5 years ago.
Yeah, and for people that don't remember, he was fired because he pretty much said to the new management that had taken over that time that he's not going to really bend to the will of any advertiser that wants to take dollars out. And the managers freaked out. They weren't used to that. And he got fired kind of a few days after the Kane and Lynch. Was it Kane and Lynch or was it Army of Two? I can never remember.
Yeah, well, Kane and Lynch was the big tipping point because, like, ads were all over GameSpot's site for that game. And then they gave it, like a 6 or something.
Yeah.
Which is, frankly, what that game kind of deserves, so...
Yeah, no one
I mean, it
no
wasn't
one
like he was off-base in his review. It's like everyone else on the internet was giving this game 9s and 10s, and, oh, fucking Gerstmann.
Yeah, just sticking it to the man. No, he was just telling it kind of how it was. But then, The story was kind of weird. It kind of got out of hand, but it was pretty much what everyone expected. Like, were you surprised by anything? By any of the details?
No, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It was never like officially disclosed what happened because of NDAs and everything. And part of why they did this is because, like, he was not fired by the GameSpot like editorial team or anything like that. It was like higher ups in the company,
right?
And all those people are no longer involved with the company, so they kind of just wanted to clear that air. Say, look, like Jeff Gerstmann's beef is not with GameSpot. It was with like those five people, and they're gone. So like, we're cool. Don't be, like, be afraid it's gonna be awkward or anything. Everyone's happy. You should be too.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. But do you get the feeling, like, I don't know, there's always stories going around in the game industry where it's like, how does Sony always mess these things up? And how do, like, all these companies that don't seem to really know how to just do something well, like, just be like Apple. Just do what Apple does. They seem to know what they're doing. Just emulate that, and no one can really figure it out. I get the feeling that, like, John Davison, this is going to be still kiss butt, but John Davison is kind of like a Steve Jobsian kind of guy in the video game editorial arena. He knows what people want, and he has a good eye for it, and he knows how to make it happen. And I don't know, this just seems like a good idea. He, you know, he built up GamePro,
well,
and it was falling.
There's the reason he's been the head of so many publications for the last 20 years.
Right. He was ahead of, like,
adapts.
The podcast curve. Like, he
knows how to adapt to the changing taste and technology of his audience.
Exactly. It just seems like he just knows, and he does it. He doesn't hesitate, and people seem to recognize that around him as well. So it's just impressive how he can always pull these things off. And, you know, we wouldn't have had, like, as strong of a podcast revolution if it wasn't for him pushing all those entities at the time. We would never got the Brodeo, and, you know, one of yours probably
wouldn't
have been
as strong.
We wouldn't
be talking here right now, probably.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah,
now,
so it's just impressive.
Do you follow Giant Bomb much? Because I have to admit, I don't. And the reason for it is, like, I've tried listening to the Bombcast. It's a little haphazard for my taste.
I listen to it every week, but it's not something I need to listen to the second it comes out. So I do follow them, but I'm not as strong of a follower as some people I know. I have a login on the site. I've considered getting a premium membership before. I never actually bit the bullet and did it. I think they're a really good team, but it's definitely a taste acquired kind of thing if you don't just fall into the peg that they've created or the
one of those situations where, like, I it's not for me, but it doesn't bother me that it exists like some other sites do.
Right, yeah.
Because they recognize their audience, and that's, like, they're saying, this is what we're doing.
They don't,
and they do,
yeah,
it, you know?
Most of the jokes are, like, they're winking and they're nodding and, like, look how ridiculous we are. Can you even believe that we're doing this? And I can always appreciate that, even if I don't necessarily appreciate the joke itself. As long as people are, like,
kind of... And I will say, I think Patrick Klepek over there is the best investigative journalist in gaming journalism, period.
He knows what he's doing, absolutely.
He's really good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's when they brought him on, it's like, okay, again, people just recognizing and getting done what needs to be done.
Yeah. Did they say what they're doing for people who have the subscriptions? Is there no change there, or is something else happening, or what's
there,
going on with that?
There's no change until April 15th. Then that membership will get split off from the other sites that were part of the Whiskey Media Empire, whatever they called it, like Tested, will get separated from Giant Bomb because they got sold to two different entities. And I think on April 15th, or maybe immediately, the people that had Whiskey Premium memberships will also get a value-added GameSpot Premium membership. It'll continue until the end of when it was supposed to end. So if you got it in January, or if you got it for Christmas, your subscription will go until next Christmas, and they're going to continue creating premium content.
All right. Well, that's good. So you're basically getting, like, a free second subscription in a way.
Right, exactly.
That's good. All right. So on the other end of the spectrum of all this good news, literally like 5 minutes later on Twitter, I saw that IGN Entertainment had a round of layoffs that they said only affected 10% of their companies, but particularly hit hard seemed to be 1UP.com. Now, you have to kind of follow the history of 1UP, because they used to be owned by Ziff Davis. Ziff's wanted to get out of the business. UGO picked them up, even though they already had a gaming site.
And
so it was already like this weird sibling kind of thing. Then IGN bought UGO and kept all of that active. So IGN had like three gaming websites that were kind of doing the same thing. So I can't say I'm surprised this happened. It still kind of sucks, though, because, like, some of the people got laid off have been there for a long time. Like, they've survived
Forever. Yeah. The
Ziff layoff and everything.
Matt Leone, especially, is the one that I can think of always being there as long as I remember 1UP. I know Terry...
Yeah, him and Terry Wynn.
Terry Wynn was in and out when I first got on 1UP a long time ago, but he's been there for a long time now as well. Now, I don't know. I never really got these big mergers or these big buyouts because they never really merged. I don't know why the Giant Bomb game spot one seems to make so much more sense than 1UP and IGN. But
well, because like Giant Bomb is uniquely different from GameSpot, I think, that the two can coexist because their voice is so different.
Yeah.
But IGN.com, 1UP.com, they were kind of the same thing, honestly. There wasn't much to differentiate. You know, aside from, like, a site designer who was writing for it, but the voice was very similar.
Yeah, it seems like 1UP could do what IGN was doing and vice versa with just a little bit at work. If GameSpot suddenly started doing stuff that Giant Bomb does, it wouldn't make any sense at all. And the audience that's there would get mad and leave, and no one from Giant Bomb or anywhere else is going to suddenly join GameSpot because they started being like Giant Bomb. Like, that already exists. So that's probably exactly what it is.
So do you think 1UP's days might be numbered within the year?
I think it seemed like the writing was on the wall when IGN bought it. Like, it seemed like they were buying it just to kind of figure out what to do with it and then maybe just have the name and focus it on something else. I don't know. IGN's done this a bunch of times, buying GameSpy or whatever, and those things just eventually dwindle into, you know, nothingness, into something that doesn't
matter. GameSpy still exists, right?
GameSpy still exists, but I mean,
yeah, I was gonna say, when's the last time I've even
it's
heard
a shell of what
it
was, and every once in a while something interesting will happen there, and then they'll fire everyone again. So, I don't know. I don't know anything about why these things happen, but I think 1UP's numbered for sure.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yes, it is.
But happier. As everybody eagerly watched the countdown and then watched the website crash, BaldursGate.com eventually did update with what we kind of expected was coming, the announcement of a Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition coming from Beamdog. So I knew this would be the case. I just didn't know to what extent the enhancement would occur. Basically, what we found out is that they have a license from Wizards of the Coast, who has a D&D license, to redo Baldur's Gate 1, its expansion, and then Baldur's Gate 2 and its expansion with the original source code, and they're enhancing the original game. It's not like a 3D remake or anything like that. It's so faithful to the original. In fact, it may even work with old save game files, which I thought was
cool.
Kind of interesting.
That is neat.
Yeah. So they're fixing the multiplayer. They're going to, you know, clean it up, make it, you know, nice and HD and everything, I presume. I mean, I'm surprised the first one's supposed to hit in the summer. You'd think there would have been, like, a trailer or some screenshots with this countdown, but it really, like, we barely know any more than what I'm reading off right here. The only other thing that was revealed today is that their hope is if these are successful, Baldur's Gate 3 will be the next thing they do, like an original game using the same engine and everything, which could be pretty cool. And they even said they may go to Kickstarter. Because just this week, Brian Fargo got Wasteland 2 fully funded, ready to go in like a week, not even.
Yeah, I think that'll work. Obviously, it would work. I think there's enough people out there willing to fund a Baldur's Gate 3. So.
All right. So, do you play World of Warcraft?
I do not.
Oh, okay. Then you're going to have to bear with me.
Now let's do this.
Okay.
I'm pumped.
Today, the NDA was lifted on an event Blizzard had where we got a ton of information on the Mists of Pandaria expansion for World of Warcraft. I guess first quick thing was they showed what the female Pandarians will look like. Did you see this?
I did not. I got my furry stuff from another website. So
yeah, it's basically a panda bear with boobs. I don't know. One website was like, oh, after how terrible the Worgen female were, I really like these. And the website was, this is fucking ridiculous. I'm like, okay, just everyone's going to have their opinion. Off you go.
Right.
Apparently, though, like, they said the animation in these character models, even compared to the ones from the last expansion, are just incredible. Like, the detail, even, like, in their faces when they talk, is just, like, unreal. I do believe Blizzard said they're going to go back and redo all the original races, especially, like, the humans really need it. So hopefully everything kind of comes up to that level, because that'd be nice. But what's interesting is, you know, the conceit of this expansion is, you know, this new continent's discovered and war is escalating. There's no, like, central villain. And the reason for that, apparently, is Blizzard said, like, we've had, like, all these, like, end-of-the-world events going on. We needed, like, a story beat where it's just kind of like things are going along.
Eh, some fucking pandas, I don't know.
There's some conflict, but that's about it. Then they'll do, like, the next expansions will go back to, like, Darkest Days are here and everything like that. But what's cool is, you know, traditionally, like, the expansion comes out, and then there's, like, a handful of content patches that finish the story. The entire story of Mists of Pandaria will be in the expansion from the get-go, and then the content patches will be sequels to that story.
Oh,
so it's a little bit of a different format from what they've done before. The pet battles, which is basically Pokemon and World of Warcraft, we've talked about some more. What's interesting is they're trying to make some more casual-friendly things, and this is their way of kind of making PvP more casual-friendly. When you're playing a pet battle, it doesn't show you who you're fighting. You don't get to chat with them or anything. It tells you how many wins you've had, but it doesn't even track your losses. It's trying to make it, like, as positive in an experience as possible.
Yeah, pandas and positivity reinforcement.
Exactly. It's all happy. They're adding a challenge mode to the dungeons that, like, you know, there's normal, there's heroic, and then the challenge mode will be, like, beat this dungeon in a certain time or do these weird, wacky side objectives. If you complete it, you get cosmetic gear. It's not going to be more powerful or anything, but, like, if you see someone wearing this stuff, you know, like, oh, God, that guy's really good. He's got this helmet or whatever.
He's got a panda merkin.
Exactly. Oh, man, now that's got to be in the game. Oh, what else? They've upped the number of zones from 5 to 7. The level cap's up to 90. And they talk about this thing called scenarios, which, best as I can tell, are, like, the public quests from Warhammer Online, where it's just kind of like a, like, an open-world event that 3 to 25 people just kind of gather around and participate in whenever it starts. So kind of, like, more organic open-world questing and dungeoning. All in all, I'm actually quite excited for it. I think it's going to be really good. The screenshots and video look really good. It's hard to believe this game's over 7 years old, because it still looks quite nice.
That is the most impressive thing, I think, about that that game, is how they keep updating the visuals. But I do feel like this podcast is overdue for a shut-up Edge guy, so just to throw a bone to your brother, I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Fair enough. Let's move on to the Humble Indie Bundle for Android 2. I bring this up, real quick, the game's in it. You get Zenbound 2, Cannibalt, Cogs, and Avedon, the Black Fortress. And then if you pay more than the average price, you get Swords and Soldiers. You get the Windows, Mac, Linux, and Android versions of all the games. But you said something that I thought was pretty interesting on Twitter today about why you feel this was better for indies than something like being Amazon's free app of the day.
Yeah, I just think it's a... well, the weird thing is, this is the first time Cannibalt, and I think a few of the others, are appearing on the Android at all, like on any form of Android markets or anything. It's interesting. I think these are the first games that have exclusively appeared first through a Humble Bundle, at least on the Android platform. And I think that this sort of marketing, it just builds up so much more excitement than which I thought was previously the best way to do it, was to be an Amazon free app of the day. Being an Amazon free app of the day, you know, you're free for that one day, but you always saw for the following couple, you know, 3 to 4 days, they would always be in the top 10 paid apps, because the excitement would build up, and then, you know, they would immediately flip the switch from free app to paid app, and then I think the ranking would still apply. So you would see them in the top three, and people would be like, well, what's this about, who hadn't checked the store the previous day and bought them? I think this is a much better model. They're going to end up making a lot more money this way. And this way, once the word of mouth spreads and they get put into the normal store, it'll continue in a similar way, to a similar trajectory to the way that the Amazon free app of the day thing worked. So they're going to make a lot more money up front and then continue. And it'll also target a more core gamer, because those are the people buying the Humble Bundle. So I think I am going to try to do a story about this, try to talk to especially the Cannibal guy. And
Didn't another company handle the Android port?
Possibly, but it's really good. It plays really well. The HD...
Well, I feel like it'd be hard to fuck up that game.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's smooth, and it would be hard to fuck up. But yeah, it works great, so...
when you tap the screen, did he jump? Well, no. Well, shit. Well,
do it again. Yeah. All right. It's always interesting how they get these games to work on four different platforms, though. Linux and Android, Windows and Mac. It's kind of
Steam codes for all of them, the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going off of interesting things you had to see on Twitter today, EA, being the jealous company that they are, and seeing how well Call of Duty Elite is doing, are like, oh, well, we're totally looking into a subscription for Battlefield 3, which, that's one thing. But, again, you had a really good idea about how this should work. Continue.
Yeah. So, as of right now, Call of Duty Elite, you get 12 months for $50, and usually people are going to buy that alongside buying the game. They're probably just going to buy the premium version of the game, which comes with like a $10 discount, comes with a 12-month subscription to Call of Duty Elite. I was thinking they should make that subscription 15 months, because if they buy it day and date with release, that 12 months is going to lapse the second the new game comes out. Now, you're saying people might buy the Elite version again, and then they'll have another 12 months. But not necessarily, because probably what's going to happen is there's going to be a competitive first-person shooter like Battlefield saying, hey, well, we've got all this stuff now. Now you have a choice. But if they extend it to 15 months, and that first couple drops of DLC is built into that subscription for the next game, they're going to be like, well, I'm already saving money on this next game. I might as well just go ahead and try it out instead of buying something completely separate and having to start from scratch. So it sort of locks people into the Call of Duty ecosystem, which I think is what they think they're doing, but I think they need to really think about how they're framing this this purchase and the
time. Well, the other thing too, that as I thought about this, is like, if you're the kind of person like who I was until I gave up on Call of Duty, who I just bought it every other year, so I would have less incentive to re-up it if I didn't buy a new game that year. I'm not going to pay for another year of Elite when I'm not getting really content for my game. But if it's that 15-month cycle, I might think to myself, well, shit, if I get the new Call of Duty, I still got 3 months of Elite yet. At least I'll get the first round of maps, and then I'll be done. But then if, you know, all goes according to plan, those first maps come out, I'm still playing with my friends. They all re-up, get new maps. I'm like, ah, crap, all right, I'm going to re-up so I can keep playing with my friends.
Right, and they can make it so you have to log on with that new game to get those maps, so it's something you lose if you don't, like, log in right away.
Right.
I mean, they could even make it 24 months. Probably what they'll end up doing, though, is, well, they probably won't do this, but what they might do or what they should do is just give the people a discount for another 12 months if they already have an Elite subscription. So instead of $50, it's $35 or $20, $25 or something like that. So just encourage people to stay within that same ecosystem. Otherwise, mm-hmm. like I said, people are still going to have that choice. Like, they're going to be like, oh, well, Battlefield now has their version of Elite, and I might buy into that.
Maybe I'll do that this year or something.
Yeah. And, you know, and just from a business perspective, they shouldn't be giving people that choice. Like, it's kind of evil, and I realize that. But
speaking of Battlefield 3, too, you know how they had that whole, like, pre-order Mass Effect 3 and you get your free copy of Battlefield 3?
Yeah. You still didn't?
No, I have not gotten that.
I remember you mentioned that. Now, have you tried EA's delightful customer service?
No, I got to call them tomorrow. I meant to do it today and just got sidetracked with stuff. But, like, I went on the forums, and one guy claimed that he was told, because he didn't pre-order the game between February 14th and the 16th when the promotion was announced and it closed, he didn't qualify. Because I pre-ordered the game on, like, February 2nd or something. But if someone tries to tell me that, I'm going to tell them they're a dick.
Yeah, well, they are a dick if they say
that.
That
doesn't make sense at all. Like, so you're saying if I would have canceled and then re-pre-ordered, I would have been okay. No, you give me my damn code.
Yeah. And
it's the only chance you have of me ever buying any more DLC or anything if I really somehow like Battlefield 3. I'm not going to buy it otherwise. Just shut up.
Yep. And again, it's just another example of how these companies don't realize. Just be like Valve and be like Apple and be smart. Just do something really simple and easy and treat everyone like really nicely and the same. And,
you know, I feel like I shouldn't have to be tracking them down. Like, hey, right,
absolutely should
you
not.
You're gonna give me? Can I have it now, please?
Yeah.
Like that's just the worst customer service.
And it's not like they don't have a database of everyone who pre-ordered it, like, at least via Origin. So it should be a
snap.
I know,
right? How, like, this should not be hard. Like, they're like, oh, the codes are going to start going out March 8th. I'm like, start? Why don't they just go out?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, their chat customer support is shit. And I think it's because it's outsourced. You could pretty well tell.
Yeah, I don't.
But
I don't,
the phone
nothing
people,
but horror stories.
Yeah, the phone people are actually you can tell they're working with limited resources, but they're willing to help you out as best they think they can. You have to kind of push them to go a little bit above what they think they should be doing. But I'll say this, they're fluent in English.
That's something.
They sound like dudes, you know, that I'd like hang out with.
Yes, someone who had an awful experience with T-Mobile like 2 weeks ago, I appreciate that. Because my problem didn't get solved until it was someone who was obviously from the States. Like that, can the cultural barrier between like just wanting shit to work really be that different? I don't know.
Yeah. And finally, because we can't avoid it, more complaints about the Mass Effect 3 ending.
I have a confession. It was me that went to the FTC.
You bastard. Who the fuck does that?
I haven't even finished it.
How do you go to the FTC to report somebody
and the Better Business
Bureau? Like the way their story ended.
Like, it also went to the Better Business Bureau. That is insane. Like, I don't even know if I believe that story. I was writing the blips today, the news blips for Bitmob, and I'm like, I'm not even going to put the story in there because this guy's just bullshitting. Like, if he really did this, I can't imagine anyone being that much of a turd. Like, I really can't.
The thing that scares me, though, BioWare said today that they haven't ruled out changing the ending. Don't cave into this, please. I beg you. I don't know what the ending is yet. I'm not there yet. You're not there yet. But don't do that. Don't do that.
I mean, I don't want to hold anything out because who knows? I might end up being one of those people. But, yeah, don't do that. Although they did change that other ending for Fallout 3. I mean, that was to facilitate DLC. And apparently they left this ending open wide enough so that DLC could be sold to us later. But,
right.
I mean, they have changed it in the past for business reasons. I don't think they should. If they're happy artistically with what they've done and their business reasons are already in place, which they probably are because they learned from that experience, yeah, then don't change it.
Did you get the From Ashes DLC?
I did. I bought it. I was about 20 hours into the game when I actually finally bought it.
But, what's your opinion of that whole thing?
I do like the character. His intro was really cool, really interesting. I've been carrying him around with me on missions, and he said some interesting things. I just hope there's more to it than what I've seen. If like his story's done with, and like he's just gonna have a few good lines here and there, I'll be like, that's disappointing at $10.
Well, I mean, based off of the Zaid and Kasumi DLC for Mass Effect 2, that's probably what it is.
And I'm getting that feeling too, which is. It's disappointing.
I really feel like I don't mind that this was post-release DLC. And, I mean, I think $10 for it is kind of pushing it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I had the Digital Collector's Edition, so I essentially got it for free. And, you know, for me, huzzah, it all worked out. But I just feel like, especially because they had the precedent of doing Zaid as their Project $10 thing in 2, they should have just done that with this character.
Yeah,
they had to know it was going to be a PR shitstorm.
Yeah.
Especially once people found the files and the disc, which, again, you have to figure people are going to do.
Yep.
I feel like it was more a decision made by the business end of either BioWare or EA,
without
and not the creators who are like, oh, we have this story we want to tell. Well, we're going to tell it for $10. What?
Yeah, without a doubt. And every time something like this happens, I know this debate is beyond old. But it completely shatters the foundation of games as art. Like, I don't want to get into that at all. I'm just saying that, like, when they turn it into such a blatant business model, it feels gross. And it's obvious to anyone paying attention that this was planned from the beginning to just be post-release DLC. Like, a separate team, all that other nonsense, whatever. That's not really the point. The point is you planned it from the very beginning as something to be sold separately immediately after the game was released, and there's no real excuse for that. I mean, I think I tweeted a couple weeks ago that if Bethesda can make money on Skyrim, just selling the game as is, and then having huge expansion pack DLC down the line, like, no other developer really has an excuse, because there is no game bigger than Skyrim, at least in terms of single player $60 retail games. So, I don't really feel that bad for EA. I don't think that they really needed to do this to make money. I think they just needed to do this to make more money. And it feels like a gouge. So, I still bought it. I want it. I mean, they knew it was going to work, and it did.
Right.
I mean, I'm not strong enough to be like, you know, I'm going to hurt my experience because you're a bunch of assholes, but they're a bunch of assholes.
That said, I do kind of like that character a lot.
Absolutely. Well, they knew. They knew
he says some cool shit.
Like, I was kind of on the fence until I kind of started getting wind of exactly what he is. And I'm like, all right, I can't miss that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always say,
evolution is a religion.
If you want to talk about feeling ripped off, if you want to talk about feeling ripped off for something you paid for, Kasumi got killed at the end of Mass Effect 2 for me. So, like, and I bought her right before I beat the game. It was the last thing I did. I bought that DLC, played her mission, and then did the suicide run. So it's like, I spent $10 for this character, and then she's gone. Like, I don't know if she may or may not show up in 3. Like, I don't know that. But she's not going to for me, even though I paid for her. So what's that? I don't know.
And I remember Mike was right, last week. It was either you or Mike that said there are no Mass Effect 2 exclusive characters that return as playable characters in Mass Effect 3, right? As far as I can tell, I don't think that's
not that I've encountered yet.
And I know there's a small cast of like playable characters, so I think I got them all now at this point. And it's all
yeah. I feel like I do too, and I feel like it's not a lot of characters.
It's not. It's a much smaller.
It's weird.
I don't know.
I mean, everyone's there. You interact with them. They have stories to tell. You just don't get to take them on missions.
Yeah. Nope. Okay. We should move on. Okay. I feel like this is the part where Mike would be like, okay, all right, okay, all right.
Yes. But the future. Is next. I like saying that.
Yeah,
for some reason.
I'm enjoying it.
So I got three kind of things we're going to try to predict what may or may not happen in the near time stream. The first thing was that Microsoft said this week, "Hey, listen, we are not announcing new hardware at E3," echoing what Sony said a few months ago, which means that the next console generation, in theory, is at least another year off. Do you think it's a good idea that they're not announcing anything, particularly Microsoft, after Sony said they weren't?
I mean, if the Valve box isn't happening or Steam box isn't happening, if there's nothing there really pressuring them, I think they're both right to not jump in too soon.
Do you not think the Wii U is pressuring them?
No. I mean, I'm going to get it. I love me some Nintendo games, but it's pretty clear that that's not going to be the catalyst to start the next generation. If it still is...
Honestly, the longer Sony and Microsoft delay, it's all gravy for Nintendo because it makes their box more relevant for longer.
Yeah, and I think Nintendo may have been counting on that, and I think that might have been part of their plan is to introduce a console that... isn't too extreme, so Sony and Microsoft don't feel like they need to get right back with something even more powerful, so that maybe Nintendo would have that, like, 3-4 year weird console cycle that would make them some money while they build their real next thing, which I think is still insane, but maybe that's what they were hoping for. But I don't know. I think Microsoft and Sony are both right to just hold off as long as they can. Wait until the components are more powerful and even more cheaper and just really maximize the next generation. Because it's going to be really different in 5 years.
How far away do you think that is?
Well, if it's not...
When you look at Witcher 2 coming out on the Xbox soon, and they said that the game running on the 360 is the equivalent of medium settings on the PC, which if I own a PC game and I set it to medium, I'm like, shit, I need to upgrade my computer.
Well, there's no doubt that we need to start upgrading the consoles. Like, we do, I feel it all the time. Like, these things aren't looking as good as they used to. There's a lot of...
You're looking like Battlefield 3 on the PC compared to...
Even just using
Xbox.
The user interface on the 360, it's like, you know they can't fix that because they would have by now. And it's pretty clear, it's just because they don't have the RAM to support a real smooth user interface that I have on my cell phone.
Yeah, well, like I said on Twitter the other day, after the teardown of the new Apple TV, the Apple TV 3 has the same amount of RAM as an Xbox 360.
Yes.
Which is twice the RAM of a PlayStation 3.
Yeah. And, I mean, PlayStation 3 is even... That's why those Skyrim and Mass Effect 3 don't work on that console. Because it doesn't have enough RAM, and it's always running the cross-media bar, which takes up a huge chunk of that. So, it's without a doubt, we need a new console generation. But in terms of their own business, you know, relevance, they need to be pushing it off as long as they can. And I think they're both kind of playing chicken, and now they feel like, all right, both teams have pulled back. We can go another E3. I mean, it's going to happen. If it's not this E3, it has.
You think for sure E3 of 2013 we hear something?
It has to be, yeah. Doesn't it? It has to be.
I guess, but that's what I said about this year. Six months ago, I would have bet my life that we were going to see at least one new console announced at E3 this year.
See, I don't know. In my gut, I never really felt like it was a sure thing. It seemed like...
That just means, like, assuming that, like, the earliest then that these might come out would be winter of 2014. That will have meant a 9-year cycle for the Xbox 360. That is unprecedented. We haven't had anything that long where there wasn't, you know, a hardware with it. Yeah, I mean, I know Sony's like, oh, yeah, we have 10-year cycles. No,
it's,
you don't.
It's much different, yeah. What they mean when they say that, and what actually happens
is we're
going to
release
different.
New hardware and stubbornly keep supporting the old one just so we could say we made it 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's already kind of broken the cycle. These consoles are going to stick around longer than any cycle before. And they're kind of just rewriting it as they go along now. Because the next console generation doesn't necessarily even need to happen like all the previous ones. They could be completely physical media lists. It could be diskless, it could just be hard drive, it could just be download, it could just be streaming. And if they wait 1-2 more years while that stuff gets perfected and makes, like, the most sense, then they'll save themselves a huge waste of time and money by avoiding putting a disk drive in their system when they really didn't need one. And if they had only waited that extra 9 months or something, then they could have avoided that. So it's just a weird transition period, and they're figuring it out. And I don't know. It's really going to be...
So I see your point. It's like it's almost too soon because we know what's just a couple years away. So you may as well wait because otherwise you're stuck for another 7 years.
Yeah, and I think
with,
the reason
with quickly
360,
outdated technology.
Yeah, the reason 360 won this generation is because it made like the least amount of mistakes. At least between... So like, if we're not counting the Wii or even thinking about really what that was. If like between Sony and Microsoft, the 360 made the least amount of mistakes, and I think they both realize that now, and they just want to have a tight, focused box that does everything smoothly and is future-proof, or as future-proof as possible. And every mistake they make costs them more money than it's ever cost them before.
Yeah, I mean, just think, it's almost hard to remember now, but don't forget, like, the original Xbox 360 models, like, they didn't even have built-in Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now, could you imagine buying any sort of, like, consumer electronic device that hooks up to your television that's supposed to be fed internet content that doesn't have Wi-Fi built into it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unfathomable.
Insane.
But that was the case in 2005. And like you said, maybe if the Xbox 360 would have come out in 2006, it would have had that Wi-Fi because the components would have been there. So you do raise a good point. So also raising a good point is Apple, who, with the launch of the new iPad on Friday, have sold 3 million iPads in 3 days. So, do you think this means anything for the future of...
Well, obviously,
in part the gaming industry, in part the technology industry, because you're almost approaching on the processors in an iPad what you can do on the consoles.
Yeah, you're
when you look at the video of Infinity Blade Dungeons, there's some high-end stuff going on there, and the resolution's already leaps and bounds higher than the consoles.
Yeah, it's like a way better-looking Xbox Live or PlayStation Network game. It looks better than any of those games, and it's almost approaching what the real physical discs do. I don't know. That market is so strange. People get really excited about it because it's new and it's different, and I think it's going to really change things, but I don't know if that dream that everyone keeps talking about the Apple TV and the iPad hooked up being like a super console where you use Airstream to play these special games and then you could hook up a Bluetooth controller. It just seems like too much work to get that same experience that you're going to get in one box that's focused on doing that. And Apple probably doesn't want to put people through that many steps to get people playing games on their television. So I think the iPad is just going to continue being a really great touch device where people are going to be playing all their strategy games and all their turn-based, words with friends games and a few more surprising things like Infinity Blade dungeons that can be played with touch and drag controls and tapping and double tapping and triple tapping and, you know, finger gestures. Like, that stuff's going to work and it's going to be really interesting and a lot of stuff's going to migrate there, but it's not going to push out the classic game design concepts that we've been living with for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. We're going to still have those on a controller with a box, whether that box is, you know, from Microsoft, Sony, or just PC, which really seems to be resurgent. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to push them out completely. Not even as much as people think they will.
Well, and the one thing that I think is honestly the biggest limiting factor to what something like an iPad can do compared to a console or a computer is just plain simple power consumption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the battery in the iPad 3 or whatever we call it now, I guess, is I think what 42.5 watts. I think the Xbox is 200, 250-ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, the recommended for building a gaming PC is 800. And when you have more power, that means you have more things running. You have more RAM. You have more processors, more cores. Like, you're not really going to ever be able to do that with an iPad unless there's some amazing breakthrough in battery technology in the next 5 years.
I mean, a lot of that has to do with this is kind of inside baseball, but, like, the ARM architecture on the chips for mobile computing. That stuff's reaching a point where its graphical power is going to meet the x86 architecture that Intel uses while still taking up a fraction of the power. But that's just the processor. There's a lot of other stuff taking up power. Like, mm-hmm. like you said, right. The RAM and the things. That stuff's never going to kind of have that breakthrough because just physically the degradation that occurs on something like you know, ready access memory is just going to fall apart. As far as I understand, I could be wrong. I'm sure there's someone that could correct me. But
someone shouting, these guys are talking out of their asses.
Yeah, could be an asshole. I've tried.
Sorry. We're just assholes. So the final thing, have you followed Windows 8 much at all?
A little bit. I'm definitely interested to see what they do with tablets.
Okay. See, I've been running the consumer preview for a couple weeks now. More telling and interesting than me, I had my mom use it on her computer for a couple weeks. I set up like a virtual hard drive so she wouldn't like lose her 7 install and told her, like, I want you to use this and see what you think. She had me take it off a few days ago. She couldn't stand it.
I think that's going to be...
Here's the problem.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Here's the problem. You know, like, everyone's like, oh, when are they just going to, like, merge iOS and OS X, like, on Macs? Use Windows 8, and you will never want Apple to do that, I promise you. Because that's basically what the new Windows is. It is the merging of a desktop OS and a tablet OS, trying to run side by side. So you open up Windows 8, you're met with the lock screen, and, you know, like, where you would... You have to log in and everything. But on a mouse and keyboard computer, the way you open that lock screen is to click and drag up like you're swiping on a touchscreen. I'm surprised. My mom actually figured that out by herself, and I couldn't believe it. Then, like, you know, you punch in your password like you're unlocking your computer and everything. And there's, like, the whole Metro UI, the new start menu. And there's no instruction. I mean, this is a completely new interface. And, it just, like, has you just go. So you're like, okay. So, there's, like, the Internet Explorer that's for Metro. And you click it and you open it, and it's full screen. It kind of looks nice. The interface is different. It hides itself when you're not using it. But they wanted it to run plug-in free, which means no flash, which we found you could get away with on a mobile device. But you still can't do that on a desktop.
Yeah.
I got this pissed-off phone call from my mom last weekend because the website she uses to get her schedule for work, like, uses Flash, and she did not understand what was going on. Like, she just couldn't understand why this was not working. And I'm telling her, like, you have to click a wrench, and then you click View on Desktop, then it opens a different version of Internet Explorer, and at this point, she just hung up the phone. It's, like, just so mad with it. It's, like, and that's the problem, is it's, like, this, there's, I mean, it's two separate OSs that actually don't play well together. You have Metro apps, you have desktop apps, they're in two different window structures. They don't go back and forth very easily. It's just very odd.
Is this going to be... Is Windows following the Star Trek pattern, do you think? It's going to be every other one.
What do you mean?
Every other one's going to be good. And every other... Like, all the odd ones are
going to
be awful.
That might be right.
Until...
Like, when I was first using it, I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. I like this interface. It looks pretty. I'm going to try to, like, stay in it as much as I can. And you can't. I mean, do you think Apple's going to make a Metro version of iTunes? No. They didn't even want to support Windows for as long as possible in the first place. I mean, Steam, Origin, they're not going to run in Metro natively. It's just so... It's like using two OSs at the same time, and it's confusing. Like, I could keep up with it just because I like researched it and like read all these blogs about tips and tricks to use Windows 8. My mom's not going to do that.
Okay, now, but let's see here. I think I agree with you. I haven't used it, but I agree with you that that desktop setup with Windows 8 and Metro makes very little sense. But let's say you have something like the Transformer Prime from Asus, where when it's a tablet, it's running Metro, and it has all that great touch gesture interface that does make sense for a touch device. But then you dock it in to its custom keyboard with an extended battery that has a really great trackpad built in, and then it turns back into Metro switched with typical Windows, and you could switch between the two at will. Do you think that there's a market for that, or is that just too confusing, or it's just going to be a very limited number of users that actually want that?
Well, there is, except here's the thing they don't really talk about much, too. When you're running it on a tablet, which is an ARM processor, again, we're getting into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, there are some x86 processors that they're working on to run Windows.
Yeah, but if it's an ARM processor, which will be pretty prevalent, because like you said, it's power-friendly.
Right, that's going to be...
It's only running apps from the Windows App Store. You don't really even get the desktop on the tablet. And the thing is, I could see where the Metro interface Windows 8 would be a nice tablet OS. It doesn't belong on the desktop. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
It would be okay if everything kind of worked harmoniously, but it just doesn't. It's just like, oh, if it doesn't work, it's just going to kick you out to the old desktop. But like, you know, like the whole Windows Snap thing, which is in Windows 7, which is pretty nice. So you can just drag something to the left and it takes up half the screen, and the right takes up half. You could kind of do that in 8. I mean, if you're in like the regular desktop and I have a Chrome window and iTunes open, I could snap them. But then if I have a Metro app and I like the Metro Internet Explorer in iTunes, I could sort of snap it. The snapping with a Metro app takes up like 3/4 of the screen, and the other app takes like 1/4. But the desktop will only work when it's in the 3/4 mode. If it's in the 1/4 mode, you just see icons of all the different apps on the desktop. And like I said, I mean, just listening to it, it's confusing.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I've heard some interesting things about that, like having a typical Windows app running in the 3/4 view, and then having a Windows Mobile, a Windows Phone 7 app running in the 1/4 view, and that's interesting and works well, and people want that on their iOS, and they want that on their Android. I haven't seen it enough, but, I mean, do you think that's just something that still doesn't make sense on the desktop, and we could see that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's what, like, again, I think on a tablet, it's fine, but not on a desktop. If you hook up dual monitors like I tend to do, like Metro just does nothing on the second monitor. It's just there for the desktop stuff. It's like I said, it's literally two different OSs running at the same time. It's just bad.
Yep. Well,
and I liked it at first. It left a great first impression. Then, like, as you start using it, you're like, you find all these things you think you should be able to do, and you just can't. And you're like, ugh.
And that sounds like Vista. So we're probably getting Vista'd. That's good.
Yeah,
good to know.
So.
It's good to know this early on that I don't need to upgrade. So.
Right. Yeah. Especially if you're a gamer, you do not need this at all.
Yeah.
At all.
I think you shouldn't probably. Just hold off. They'll either do a service pack and another service pack, and then the third service pack it'll be pretty great, and then we'll get Windows 9 like a week later.
Right. All right. Mike probably hated everything about that segment, which is why I figured I could get away with it.
I think this podcast is overdue for
let's
a shut
go to
up,
our
Mike.
Weekend gaming.
There we go.
There, yeah. You can't say anything. He's not going to listen to this anyway.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, let's go to our week in gaming. Do we want to talk a little more about your thoughts on Mass Effect 3, just the game itself and, you know, the act of playing it, story aside?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I think I'm having a blast. I can't wait to get back to playing it all the time. There's a ton of great things about it. I will say that I thought the tone was kind of weird from the beginning. I don't understand how they can open up with like this, the most devastating attack to ever happen to Earth, and then I'm gonna go out on a kind of nonchalant trot around the galaxy to solve all these problems, and then there's gonna be something for me to come back to. Like, it's really hard for them, it seems, for them to convey urgency and desperation.
Yeah, this is just a problem with any freeform RPG. I mean, it's been the same in Skyrim, Oblivion.
Yeah, but
know, anything. I always
find it
easier.
It's easier to ignore in Skyrim and in Oblivion, though. It's just so they open up with this horrible thing happening, and then they have you have these dream sequences that sort of are there to tell you to feel bad, which I actually like. I know some people had some problems with those. I like those dream sequences,
mm-hmm.
But it just seemed like the tone just seems so off that it's hard to reconcile.
Well, it's like they're trying to enforce to you throughout the story that, oh, you know, Earth's hit pretty hard, but we're hanging on. And just based on, like, the only time you were on Earth in the beginning when you saw what the Reapers do, you're just thinking, well, how the hell are you even hanging on?
Yeah, like, but I think it's easily solved.
It should have been like Half-Life
like,
2, like the 7-hour war.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's easily solved by moving that attack later into the game. Like, there's just, maybe there's
Like, knowing the Reapers are coming.
Yeah, there's a small recon force that comes and hits Earth, and it's really bad, but it's not that bad. And you have a certain amount of time that's indefinite because it's an open-world game, but you still feel that urgency that you know they're coming, and then eventually you trigger that attack. And it's like, okay, now I have one last thing I need to go do. Like, literally one last thing. Like, there's no side missions left. Like, you just, one last thing I need to go do. And then I got to go save Earth. Like, something like that. If they just want to move that attack to, like, the last portion of the game or had it set up the third act, I wouldn't have this problem with the tone. But it's really hard for me to reconcile that. I still love the game. Like, that's, like, my major gripe. But, that I found that hard to swallow.
Now, I don't know. A lot of people just seem to be complaining, like, oh, they've dumbed it down. It's even less of an RPG now. Blah. Like,
yeah.
Do you find that to be the case? Because
no.
I really don't.
No. I mean, the only character that I really focus on upgrading is Shepard. I kind of let I'm not going to assign 40 points to each character every time I use them for the first time.
I do.
I mean, that's fine, and I'm glad that option's there. I'm just not going to take that time. I'm way too busy for that. So I'm glad that there's the autofill and all that stuff. But I do want to focus on my Shepard and get the exact perks that I want. So it seems like it scales to kind of how you want to play it, which was sort of how it was being built when they had that story break that there was going to be an option, like you pick to play, whether it's like a story mode.
Yeah, role play mode or action mode or story mode, yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm going to play role play mode. That's what I want to have all the options to my disposal. And it kind of seems like they did that. And then they sort of just built in the how much you want the RPG in there. I don't know. Like, the missions don't end with, like, a level over screen anymore.
Yeah, if anything, I'd say it's more RPG than 2, because that's gone. There's a little bit more to inventory now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, the only thing you really lose is, like, the hacking minigames, which I actually strangely enjoyed them the last time around, but it's not like them missing is like, oh, well, it's not an RPG anymore.
Yeah,
I can't hack.
Nothing's missing from this game that I remember from the previous two that I wish was back. Although I do wish I wish they would have put in one Mako level, just one. But they did put in some good Mako references, like the two engineers arguing.
The self-referential humor in this game is fantastic.
It's off the charts good. It's so good.
It's so fantastic.
Garrus always like cracking about how he needs to make calibrations and like referencing it. Like he always does that.
Yeah.
God, there's a bunch of others that I can't remember, but it's really good, that stuff. I really appreciate that.
So, guesstimate in your head, how far along do you think you are?
I think I'm pretty close. I think I'm coming up on the third act. I just finished another major plot point. I brought the Quarians on along.
Quiet. I'm not there yet. So
okay. Yeah. Exactly. So
that's the next thing I'm going to do.
Right.
So
you see that? That's the big one that's on the overworld map. Saying, well, once you do that, a bunch of the side quests you needed to do might disappear. So go do all that stuff first. Is what that map is telling
you. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. See, the thing is, my progress in this game was considerably delayed, which is how fucking nice it's been outside.
Right, it's been really great. I feel guilty playing.
I know. I have not been able to rig myself to play this game during the day, and then at night is like when everyone wants to do stuff, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't play Mass Effect. Everyone leave me alone. Can't it rain for a day? Come on.
Yeah. Did you meet Barlow Vaughn?
No.
See, if you don't remember him, then met him.
Okay, that's the guy who, like, wanted me to go find some mercenaries or something,
Like that, yeah. I think I did it, and then I come back, and I must have triggered something. I think I triggered the the beginning of the second
act. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Where the attack happens.
Yeah.
And now he's gone, and I can't find him. And I suppose from what I've heard, I'm just never going to see him for the rest of the game. And I'm like, well, maybe.
Well, the thing is, too, I got that quest from him, and I could never find where to go to do it.
Yeah.
It was never on my map. That's one thing that I've played it more, it bothers me. Your quest log gets really crowded.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's...
Well, because every time you, overhear someone saying, if only we could find, better power couplings, we could improve the Citadel's infrastructure. That, automatically is added to your quest log right next to every other quest you have. And there's nothing to say, this is just, a little fetch quest, and this is, you're going to go fight some Reapers for 20 minutes, and it's going to be awesome. And it all builds up, but then when you go to the galaxy map, it's not readily apparent where you need to go for all those little quests. And that's why, I never found that one.
Yeah.
It never just said, underneath the galaxy for that one, mission, the mercenaries. I don't know if I was supposed to go find it on my own or what.
Yeah, that stuff's a mess. I kind of hate that. I kind of hate how... I hate getting a new gun. I'm never going to equip a gun if I find it in the field or whatever. I'm just going to go with...
See, that's the thing. I did find a new gun when I was doing this one mission with some Turians. And it's kind of amazing.
Well, I mean, I was
really happy to find it.
I'll go back and I'll try it and I'll upgrade it to 5. Like it has 5 levels or whatever. Because my level,
right.
The gun I have is upgraded to 5. I can't compare the gun I have at level 5 with the gun I found at what it will be at level 5. So I don't know if it's going to be better than the gun I have. So it's really frustrating trying to compare and contrast weapons. I just wish it would really just say this is better. Clearly better. Now, they don't want to do this. They just want to have a give and take. But don't do that. That's so frustrating when you find stuff, because I just want to know what's better. I'll play around to a certain extent, but if something's working, chances are I'm just going to stick with that. But yeah, same with the quest. The quest log is just a mess.
Yeah. You're on the Xbox, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Did you participate in their little multiplayer event they had this weekend?
I didn't. I was too busy.
Yeah, it was you had to beat a Reaper round on silver, and you got an item pack. And man, I only got to do it last night for a little while, and I could not fucking do it. Every time I was just playing with pickup groups, we'd get to round 10, and that was the round when everybody decided, hey, we've been sticking together in this corner and doing pretty good. Oh, it's round 10. Let's all run in different directions. So I was like, wait.
Bored. But, yeah. Bored.
Just run up and back. Die. But still, I mean... I know Mike disagrees with me vehemently in this, but especially if they keep doing things like that every so often where they put up kind of a unique goal or objective for the community, I could see myself playing this multiplayer after I finish the game. I happen to really like it.
I haven't touched it. I didn't even play it in beta. I'm like, I'll get to it when I get to it. I'm going to wait until it's what I need to do in the storyline, and then I'll see if I like it, because I just want to kind of... I want to get the storyline out of the way, because I got a lot of other stuff I need to be doing, and this is always on the top of my list, so I just kind of want to have this out of the way so I can sort of spread my time around. I don't know. The whole freemium and not being free thing kind of throws me off, and I kind of hate that. But, I mean, if I can ignore that and just grind and get the packs the old-fashioned way, I'll probably be pretty happy with it, because I'm always up for a decent horde mode. I just don't know if it's going to be... I would probably side with Mike. I'm probably not going to be playing it in a month. If I have the story beaten and I need to put it back in just to play multiplayer, I can't really see myself doing that. I mean, I prefer
again. This is the perk of having it on my desktop on my computer.
That's fair.
It's just there.
That's a good point. Yeah, that probably would make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
But let me put a call out. If I do need people to play with, and anyone's listening, they need someone to play with, get me on Xbox Live. Joe one up, or I think I changed it to Jeff Grubb. Just Jeff Grubb. So get me on there.
See, even I know it better than you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Have you played anything else this week then?
Just some mobile games and Resident Evil Revelations, which I still need to finish. I've only played 10 minutes of that, but I've been playing.
What do you think so far?
Do
you have a circle pad?
I don't. I keep planning on going to get one. I'm like, oh, I'll get it, and then I'll really just fly through that. I am going to get it, but it plays all right without it. It plays fine. It plays like Resident Evil 4, which, you know, is fine with me. But really the games I think I want to talk about is Draw Something and Scramble with Friends. Scramble with Friends, I guess everyone knows about, but I just kind of got on board.
It's Boggle.
Yeah, it's Boggle. It's
I actually gave up on it. It's what's stupid is you have to like pay coins to play.
Yeah, that again,
it's just dumb.
Again, that's like, it. Just it breaks my heart every time that happens.
It is encouraging me to not play the game.
Because I mean
in their head, it's like, oh, like they're going to be addicted to the game. They'll pay us money to keep playing. No, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm going to stop now because I've run out of coins.
And we're not going to go back. Like, I think the reason Peggle 2 hasn't come out is because they can't figure out a good way to incorporate tokens and coins that you have to pay for. Like, I mean, I don't think I'm wrong, but Peggle didn't have like a microtransaction thing, did it?
No, they just did the expansion, and that was it.
Right, like, what the hell was wrong with that? Can't I just have my game, my whole game, and just know that I have the whole thing? I know
that. Well, even with Draw Something, I thought it was kind of ridiculous that for free, you didn't even get the primary colors.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't have green.
Yeah, that drives me crazy. That's...
Now, at least, like, the ad-free version was on sale for, like, 99 cents, and I was just like, okay, I want to get rid of the ad, so I'll pay a buck. And I got like 450 free coins.
Okay, I've been planning to buy it.
Yeah, I think it's like the Mardi Gras pack of colors. Pretty much has all the colors you would need. So I was like, okay, fine. Like I can now draw a tree.
See, I'm not going to be able to do much better with the colors. It'll help in some circumstances. But I was playing with someone today. I think it was John Davison, and he drew a hut with like shadowing and all kinds of like really minute detail. And I got it as soon as he did the outline of a hut. But he goes on to like do all the shadowing and so I'm like, yeah, my clumsy fucking fingers aren't going to be able to do anything like that. So I can.
Well, I'll tell you this: I have it on my iPhone and my iPad. It's a hell of a lot easier to play on the iPad.
Yeah, I'm playing on my tablet, and it makes a huge difference. I can't play it on the phone anymore. I try with my pinky, but it doesn't work. It's an interesting game, but when you can't play with randoms because it's like male name, and then he waits a second, and he's just like Luke. I'm like, oh, okay, so it's Luke. And he just wrote it out. Thanks. So, like, all right, quit. I'm not playing with you anymore. So that's frustrating. But I have enough people on my friends list, especially because of Facebook. Everyone's playing it. So, and
yeah,
your friends, they tend not to cheat. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like, you could just, like, write the answer, but it's like, well, what's the point?
Right. You're
We won nothing.
It's literally a waste of time. Like, I can't think of a greater waste of time than just playing that. Like, what, are you addicted to the coins? Like, do you just want more colors?
I guess. Like,
you don't get anything. You just get more colors to help you draw better, but you're not drawing.
You're not drawing.
You want to be able to write Luke out with purple? Like, what are you doing with your life? Yeah. It's hard to understand.
All right. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I played anything else, really, this week. Play Drink the Beer on Saturday.
Is that when
I won?
Is that when you were drinking the Conways?
No. It was just Guinness and Jameson this weekend. We were in Cleveland on Monday. That's when I had that Conways. But yeah. Oh well. No, I talked about Journey last week. That's right. Mike played it, and I'm sure he'll talk about it next week. Actually, this was kind of fascinating to me. So I played Journey in one sitting and found it to be an absolutely incredible experience. Then I just went down to Mike's PlayStation downstairs, like logged in as me, downloaded it, then he could log in and play it.
Right.
And so I'm like, he goes to start to play. I'm like, well, hang on, I'm just going to watch you get going here. I watched his entire playthrough.
Huh.
And I'm usually very bad at watching people play video games because usually they do something that pisses me off
of course.
I just want to grab the controller from their hand and be like, this is how to do it. Even if they're like, Mike's not bad at video games, and even he'll like just do something annoying. I just want to be like, oh, give me that. But I watched him play the whole game, and it was fascinating to me because I got to see how different of an experience he had. Because the game, to my surprise, it's fairly linear. But just because of when someone else joined him in the multiplayer and what that person did differently that affected what he did, made for an actually cool thing to watch. Like, I really enjoyed the time watching it. Plus, just to see him react to the things, to see how I reacted to it was a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, of course. I could see that being the case with that game.
Yeah, there's like a whole stage I went through by myself. Like, no one else went through it. And to me, it was a particular part in the game where I thought being by myself made it cooler. But then I got to see how it was for him because he had someone with him.
Did you see
it? It's a really cool concept. I love that
game. Did you see that tweet today that someone tweeted? It was someone's like, it turns out that person following me in Journey was another person. My mind is blown. Like, it's crazy to think there's people that don't realize that, but you wouldn't if you didn't weren't following the game or like, reading
stuff. I knew that because I read about that game when it was first announced like 2 or 3 years ago. So, like, I knew that was going to happen going into it. And Mike did, too. But, yeah, like, you hear about
there are
going to
be players
like,
out there that have no idea.
Think it's an AI.
Yeah. Like, that discovery must be really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wish I was blind all this stuff so that I could go in that fresh.
Right. Like, I did a good enough job to keep myself in the dark about the actual game itself, but I knew that concept.
Right. Yeah. It seems like something that could be really, like, illuminating, and you're like, wow, this is really different if you didn't know. But I guess it's still very different even if you are completely aware, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right. Unless there's anything else, let's go to the releases this week.
Excellent. Great. I could smell. I didn't even know. My girlfriend's making fajitas, and I could smell them, so let's get to the releases.
All right. I didn't even know this was coming. Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City apparently comes out this week.
I don't even know what that is.
I think it's like a multiplayer Resident Evil game set between 2 and 3? Something like that?
I can't stand Resident Evil anymore. Revelations is a fine game, but that...
I'm glad someone's on my side with this.
Yeah, that fiction is just so stupid, and it's...
That's the thing. At this point, for me to try to play a Resident Evil game, I have no fucking idea what's going
on. Yeah, and it doesn't matter, because even if you do, you really don't, because they're just going to introduce a whole new round of bullshit. And it's just so frustrating. Like, the things about zombies is when you strip it away and you make it really simple and straightforward and about survival. And I understand they wanted to make an action game, and they did that. They can do that, and it's fun. But it's just so bloated and overwrought at this point that it's boring as hell. Zombies are pretty boring at this point anyhow. But just throwing in all that other nonsense just for what seems like the hell of it. Like, just giving a team something to go to and just... I don't know. It's boring at this point.
Yep. Speaking of things that become boring, Ninja Gaiden 3 is also coming out.
Yeah.
Did you see, like, apparently they got rid of combos...
Hmm.
Like, but remember how, like, I mean, I didn't play much of the first game, and I didn't even touch the second, but, like, I knew one of the basic strategies was between comboing an enemy, you threw your little shurikens to keep the combo going, and that's, like, pretty much all they were good for. Combos are gone, but the shurikens are still there, but they're, like, completely worthless. I don't know. I think this is a sign of what happens after Itagaki leaves. Like I said, not that I love the franchise in the first place, but I can understand why people liked it, at least. Let's see, we've got Total War Shogun 2, Fall of the Samurai, which is basically The Last Samurai, the video game, from what I can tell. Good movie. Kid Icarus Uprising. You know, I didn't even know this till today. Two things, actually, I didn't know till today. First of all, it doesn't support the Circle Pad Pro.
Yep.
I mean, I played it at PAX. It's a twin-stick shooter.
Yep, it should support it, but it doesn't.
You use the touchscreen like an analog stick.
Yep, they thought now, that was best.
Now, it works with the Circle Pad Pro, you just can't map aiming to anything. Like, you could use the analog stick on the right to move.
Yep. For left-handed gamers.
The other thing I found out today, it comes with a stand.
You just found that out today?
Yeah.
People say it works, which, of course, how could it
but
not?
But how ridiculous is that? Oh, we have to make this stand because playing it with the stylus is uncomfortable. If only we had a second analog stick, then some guy is probably in the corner going, we do.
See, this, because, I mean, that's a Nintendo-published, produced game. I mean, at least published. I don't know. Maybe they shopped it
out.
Yeah,
so they should have known about the analog stick first.
Doesn't this, like, kind of scare you that maybe the next 3DS won't have a built-in dual analog? Like, I'm...
Yeah, this probably... This does kind of point in that direction,
I'm, like,
it?
Totally scared that that's going to happen. And then what are they even doing? I don't know. I think it's a huge mistake if they don't. It seems obvious that they should. Everyone just assumes they will. But I wouldn't bet on it.
Oh, Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Silent Hill HD Collection. 2 and 3. Okay. I tried playing Silent Hill 2 and the squad did the mission for it. I couldn't get into it. But maybe it was a technological thing.
Yeah, maybe HD help.
Kinect Rush, a Disney Pixar adventure, which I'm strangely excited for. I mean, I'm not going to go buy it this week or anything, but I do want to play it at least.
It's not that strange.
Yeah, you know me. Armored Core 5. If you like robots. Oh, Angry Birds Space comes out. I wonder what that'll be like.
Probably like
the video actually.
Probably like
cool.
Osmos, kind of, with the
It's like the Super Mario Galaxy of Angry Birds.
Yeah.
DLC for Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning is coming tomorrow. And Rayman 3 HD, which I hated Rayman 3. Because Rayman 2 was so good. And then Rayman 3 came out, and John Leguizamo was the voice of Glowbox. his like gibberish voice from Rayman 2 is like, blah, 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 like, it fit. And then you had John Leguizamo going, Rayman. I was like, what the fuck is... Nah.
He was just coming off his famous role, The Pest.
Yeah, probably. You know, a little nostalgia for the Mario movie.
Maybe he was the clown in Spawn. Maybe that's what he just done.
You know, people like Moulin Rouge.
Yep. What? He played two... Okay, let's go on.
Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yeah. He played that one, and he played the clown in Spawn, which was also kind of a midget. Maybe he was just so fat, he, like, weighed himself down. But let's not talk about John Leguizamo. Luigi Mario, as I like to call him.
I met John Leguizamo, actually. He's a nice guy.
I love his one-man show. His one-man show is really funny, but other than that, I don't really necessarily need him in my life.
Okay. Well, then, let's move to the ending, because we're done.
Hooray!
So, thank you for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast. You can listen to more of us at edpodcast.com, the iTunes Music Store. Leave a review if you're so inclined. Facebook.com/explodingbarrel and twitter.com/explodingbarrel. Jeff, where can the good people find you?
Jeff Grubb on Twitter. Jeff Grubb pretty much most places. If not, just tweet me and I'll tell you where you need to find me. I'm also on BitMub. I'm also starting somewhere new pretty soon. I probably can't talk about it. I wasn't told explicitly that I can't, but I'll have something about that on my Twitter feed, I'm sure. Is the music, the Indian music, playing right now?
It could be.
Yeah, it's just weird because it feels like it should be, and I can't hear it, so it's freaking me out.
Yeah, because you're used to listening.
Yeah, exactly.
To
yeah.
All right, so thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast. Goodbye.
It was a blast. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Man, you're terrible at this. All right.